coming up next. Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training, with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
Between last week's Black Friday and this week's Cyber Monday, I hope you all survived in one piece and made a tidy profit in the process. On today's show, we're back to business as usual, talking about some key elements of what it takes to keep a small business running, from getting new business to managing your finances. We have two guests this week. Our first is Dana Twite of Twite Financial Education. She's going to share with us her insights about what it takes to be a financial consultant, and we'll explore some of the more uncomfortable aspects of personal and business finance. Our second guest is Patricia Vaccarino of PR for People. She's just published her sixth book, and she's here to talk about personal branding. We're also introducing a new element on the program. Until now, we've been speaking with small business owners and the people who support them, but we were leaving out a critical component, that is customers. So last week, we took a ride up to Green Lake to see what people had to say about their holiday shopping plans. You'll be hearing from the voice of the customer later in the show. We also have a story about the new toll going up on the 520 bridge and its potential impact on small business. Stay with us for this show that's all about business services, what it takes to be one, and why it makes sense for you to tap into a consultant's head here on Minding Your Business. Minding Your Business is about giving you the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. Are you starting one? Do you own a business? Tell us about it or ask questions we'll answer on the air by calling 866-712-1300 or email info@mybmedia.com. According to Thursday's online Seattle Times, tolling on the 520 bridge will start late this month. The rates are set according to when you travel. Nothing for an overnight trip, $2.25 at midday during the week, and as much as $7 for a round trip during peak commuter periods. The Washington State Department of Transportation, or WSDOT, says that toll rates are designed this way to help ease congestion during peak travel times. Here's how the system will work. You'll drive across the bridge as usual, but there won't be any toll booths. Tolling equipment will automatically detect your good-to-go pass transponder and deduct the fee from your prepaid account, which you need to set up in advance online or at WSDOT Customer Service Center. Drivers who don't have the state-issued pass will be billed by mail and penalized an extra $1.50. Whatever type of good-to-go account you choose requires a minimum $30 balance. Accounts established online will be automatically replenished. If you're concerned about privacy, you can get an unregistered pass account. Ironically, you'll need to set up the account in person in order to receive notifications by email. WSDOT anticipates that a large number of drivers will seek alternative routes to avoid the tolls. With the traffic increasing on these other roads, they expect peak hour speeds to decrease by about 5 to 10 miles per hour, while increasing speeds on 520 by about 20 miles per hour. So it sounds like you'll get wherever you're going faster, but it will cost you. The specific date for when the tolling starts won't be announced until next week, and it looks like the tolls are going to be around for a while, or at least until the 30-year bonds are paid off. Toll devices are available at goodtogo.org. Just be aware that the Good2Go website is being upgraded and won't be available until after 7 a.m. on Monday, December 5th. You're listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. Coming up, we take a walk around Green Lake to hear where people are going to buy gifts this year, and we'll hear from some who don't plan to do any shopping at all. We're out here asking people what their shopping habits are going to be during the holiday season. Where are you planning to do your shopping this year?
My name is Linda Mason Wilgus, and I'm from Seattle. We are a family that loves the outdoors, and we're skiers, and so that will probably be one of our first stops. In fact, after this walk around Green Lake is to go to REI and stock up on some new long underwear and some outdoor running gear.
Are you planning on doing any shopping at local retailers?
Well, one of my favorite places is Cracker Jack's in Wallingford Center, and it's been around for a long time, but they feature just really neat things made locally by local artisans. I love Pike Place Market, so I always try to shop down there. There's the spice shop down there. Spanish Table is really fun. So those are some of my favorite places.
So if you could say your name and where you're from.
Mike Herndon from Seattle.
What are your plans to shop this holiday season?
I shop late.
And where do you shop late?
I usually look at things I'm interested in, and then I look on the internet and see if I can find the stuff on the internet, and often we'll buy on the internet.
So you really can't shop too late on the internet because you have to wait for shipping, right?
No, I'm not the day before shopping, but late.
And where are you most likely to shop online?
There is no specific. I'll look for the product as opposed to the site. Well, I usually Google the information and seek out what I'm looking for, and then I'll research where I can find the better price.
Tell us your name.
Raquel Crozier.
And where are you from?
I'm from Seattle and live in Olympia.
And tell us a little bit about your shopping plans this holiday season.
I'm boycotting. I'm not going shopping this year.
And can you give us a little insight as to why that might be true?
Yeah, we're in a recession. I think it's absurd that people are standing in line waiting for expensive things that we all can't afford, and I refuse to do it.
Could you tell me your name?
Vincent Gill of Mount Lake Terrace.
Beth Gill of Mount Lake Terrace.
Sydney Chapman Renton.
Where are you planning to do your holiday shopping this year?
Just planning to stay home with the family and do house stuff and work and sell to other people. I sell appliances, so I see the madness, and for me, I like to stay home.
Where do you work, may I ask?
Arnold's Appliance in Bellevue, Washington. Major appliance store, from small to big, you name it, we can do it.
Okay, that's great. Great to get the tagline in there. That's great. So you're not even going to buy dog treats this year?
Well, we do have dog treats, always made for her. We went and bought all our ingredients, and we did everything at home. She makes wonderful pies and turkey. She's a pastry chef, and we're lucky that people buy from us.
You're a professional baker, or you do it for fun?
I have a business. It's called Bella Notte Specialty Desserts, and it's a commercial spot. I don't have a retail place.
So while we're at it, how would someone get in touch with you to place an order?
I'm on the website at www.bellanotedesserts.com. We believe in family and not buying, going out and retailing. It's too much stress. So we spend our time and our money with our family, the important people in our life.
Tell us your name again and how old you are.
Sydney, and I'm 15.
And are you doing any holiday shopping this year?
Yeah, I think so. I live in Renton, so we have the Westfield Mall, so I'll probably go there and go some shopping.
And what are some of your favorite shops down there?
Probably Forever 21 and Hollister and Victoria's Secret, Pink. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Thank all of you, and have a great holiday season.
You too. Happy holidays.
If all the hype about social media is confusing you and it's just taking too much of your time, there's a solution. Social Persuasion is the book that will help you make sense of social media, from giving you valuable tips about choosing the right social sites to getting the word out about your business to time management techniques. It's the only book on social media designed specifically for the small business. To learn more and to order, visit socialpersuasionbook.com. So we heard a story earlier about the 520 bridge, and it seems like the tolls are going to impact businesses on both sides of the bridge. But how will it impact you? Is it going to hit your pocketbook? Is it going to change your plans about how you travel across the bridge? Tell us by calling 866-712-1300 or email info@mybmedia.com. That's M as in Mary, YBmedia.com. You're listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. Next up, we'll be talking with Dana Twite of Twite Financial Education and Patricia Vaccarino of PR for People, who will give us tips and insights and ideas about personal branding. She has a new book called Steps. It's her sixth, and she'll be telling us where dance and business intersect. It'll be very interesting to see what steps you need to take for your business. And Dana Twite will be talking about what it means to really think positively about your business and to drive it forward and not let the economy get you down.
And now, we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Here's Robin.
Our next guest is Dana Twight, a registered investment advisor at Twight Financial Education. Dana's fee-only practice focuses on educating her clients about personal finance. Twight has her degree in economics and a master's in education from the University of Washington. She's been a loan executive for United Way of King County and has worked with the Seattle Times Community Literacy Program. Dana has also been involved with the Washington State Board of Education and the Personal Financial Literacy Board of the Washington Jumpstart Coalition. Dana is currently a member of the Financial Planning Association of Puget Sound. Welcome to Minding Your Business, Dana.
Thank you, Robin. It's a pleasure to be here.
Your materials say that you specialize in making uncomfortable financial topics more comfortable. What's so uncomfortable about finance?
How long did you say we had? Well, there's many uncomfortable topics. In fact, just yesterday I met with a client who was telling me that she really wanted to have a partner clean up his credit report. And I really complimented her because this morning I heard a story from somebody who actually left her partner because he had, well, he didn't just have bad credit, he had no credit and an IRS lien. So it's interesting how people can date and move in together and get married, but they have never shared the gory financial details.
I guess that's something you don't investigate right away. Which date do you bring that up?
I don't know. I've heard a lot of rules for the first, second, and third date. Maybe for the fourth date is the money one.
I mean, does that come after the kid thing or before the kid thing?
You know, in an ideal world, Robin, it should come before the kid thing so that you can figure out how much to save for college.
So if we took this idea of discomfort with financial issues, what is particularly uncomfortable for a small business?
For a small business in the beginning, I would think financing your startup costs is a huge thing.
And why is that an uncomfortable topic, do you think, for people who are starting a business?
Well, it might be uncomfortable because you have a fear of how you're going to do that. I think in a personal services consultancy like mine, I don't have to go out and buy technology and so forth. I have software, but you can work virtually anywhere these days.
But if you had a need for some capital equipment or if you're opening a restaurant, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you did that, well, one of the things that I've learned over the years is you have to be really nice and communicate with potential bankers.
And what do you think bankers are most interested in knowing of all?
Probably a track record of success in the past. Certainly, if you're just starting out, one of the keys is how you've handled your own money in the past. This is a good time. We have the ghost of Ebenezer Scrooge on our mind, you know, the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. So one of the things I like to say about your past is that's your current net worth and how you've handled your credit. So your credit report, your credit score.
So that has the personal really bleeds over into the business finance in a big way, particularly if you don't have any other business track record.
Very true. Very true. So it behooves you to communicate as much as possible with people like your bankers, or if you have people use things like Kickstarter now, or you might belong to some sort of startup organization where you could meet some angel investors.
So let's say you have a business that's already running and things are a little tight right now. What are some of the issues that a running business is facing in terms of their finances?
In terms of, well, let's see. So you have the cost of capital, acquiring capital. I think one of the things that I've certainly learned over the years is doing cash flow planning. That's pretty huge. And trying to time things. I'm sure we've all spent time working for employers where you worked on budget variances over time. And when you're the only one, I do find it much easier to negotiate with my boss since it's myself. But at the same time, it's good to get input from other people.
Are there any particularly uncomfortable financial situations that arise, let's say, when it's a family-owned business?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that can happen there that many people fail to plan for is succession planning. Let's say you're a family business, and it might be dad or dad and mom, and all of a sudden one of them comes to work one day and keels over. And if you haven't done any succession planning,
it may not be that extreme. I mean, it could be just that maybe they're slowing down a little first.
It could be that. It could be that. Or there could be some sort of emergency. But I'd say especially in a family-owned business, if you're the owner and you have some thoughts in your head about which family member might be a good person to take over, that's a really important thing not to neglect right away.
And how early on do you think you should start thinking about something like that?
I would think that a good time to do that is before you actually set up the business, whether you incorporate, become an LLC, et cetera.
The other issue I think that comes up with businesses is how much financial information do I share with my employees?
Interesting question. I think, I've worked for several large companies that were public, and of course they share a lot of information, some of which I think when you're an employee, you receive in a different way. You might say, I know someone who recently left a big company, and all of a sudden what she's hearing now being an ex-employee is different than the internal messages they were getting before. When you're a small company, you have to be really careful. A lot of startups probably share quite a bit, and usually everybody knows when it's the end of the quarter and you're having to ship those goods in order to make the production numbers before the end of December.
You're listening to a program about business-to-business services here on Minding Your Business with financial educator Dana Twite. I'm Robin Block. Have you ever worked with a financial consultant? Tell us about it. Why is it important for businesses to support the financial education of their employees?
Oh, Robin, I'm so glad you asked that. This is huge. This is huge. I've been reading about it in human resource journals and so forth. One of the things that happens with employees is their productivity is affected. In other words, they might not be giving you their all if they are worried about financial stress. There are a number of organizations that have been measuring this during the, what do we call it now? Is it the Great Recession, the financial crisis?
Oh, it's just a dip.
It's just a dip, right. So one company could have people wanting to take out a lot of 401k loans, which could be impacting that particular department. There are other companies where employees might be needing to get an advance on their paychecks. Some companies are equipped to do that. Others, actually, there are people that work for responsible companies all over the country where they're having to go to check cashing places, the ones that charge you 300% per annum.
I could see why that might be a problem then. But let me ask you a different question, change tack a little bit. You say that you're a no-fee financial planner.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that is and some of the pros and cons about that?
The shortest way to describe that, Robin, is that all of my compensation comes only from clients. I do not have assets under management. I do not have custody of securities, and I make no specific product recommendations for which I am incentivized.
Okay, so one of my key questions about that is typically financial planners do get a commission on what they're selling, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You're saying that you don't. Are you able to sustain as a consultant, get enough fees from people who are willing to pay fees to you versus, let's say, commissions?
Right. I think for me, because I have about 25 years of experience in financial services in Seattle from being a stockbroker and Dean Witter in the 80s, when there was no internet.
When? Yeah. When was that?
To working at banks and savings and loans. I'm starting out fresh as a fee-only financial planner, so I can build my entire business and cost structure only around client compensation. I have heard from some of my colleagues that if you've previously been in the other business with compensation derived from investment products, that it's harder to make that transition to a fee-only income.
We're going to revisit with Dana a little later, but first of all, tell us, Dana, how can people get in touch with you to learn more about your services?
Oh, thank you. People can follow me on Twitter. The symbol is at Twite Financial, and I also have a website. It's twitefinancial.com.
And do you have any tips you'd like to share with our audience, particularly our small business audience?
Well, one of the things is, I think if you'd like to take care of your employees this month, I've heard that there are companies.
What do you mean take care of? You mean like?
I've heard there's bonuses. I don't know. I think that's harder in the small business community. But perhaps if you don't have a lot of money to share with employees this month, you could offer to do something like give them a couple of hours off to go holiday shopping for those people who are doing that.
I love that. That's great. And then it's a no cost. That's awesome.
There you go.
We've been speaking with Dana Twite of Twite Financial Services here on Minding Your Business at Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. It's all about business-to-business services on today's show. Coming up next, more from our shoppers at Green Lake and an interview with Patricia Vaccarino of PR for People, who's here to share with us techniques for developing a personal brand.
be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. And now, the Sandler Training Sales Meeting Minute with James Alberson. Here's James.
Be a self-starter. A race car has a tremendous amount of potential energy but cannot start until someone waves the green flag. The powerful engines of a jet cannot lift that plane 1 inch off the ground without ample runway and someone activating its controls. A locomotive can be held in place by a single block of wood placed under its wheel. Yet under power, it can go through a brick wall 10 feet thick. Raw power has only potential. Machines cannot turn themselves on. People can. If you're going to wait to feel right about doing something, it may never happen. The self-starter knows that there is never a right time to get started. Too many people sit around waiting to be motivated, as if there were some chemical reaction about to take place. The self-starter acts on his goals, and the motivation to achieve those goals is built into that action. If you are not feeling up to it, no amount of concentration, wishful thinking, or smokescreen planning will get you into action. Things in motion tend to stay in motion. Things at rest remain at rest. The more you think about becoming motivated, the better chances are that you won't. The self-starter knows that regardless of how he feels at any given moment, how he will feel in the next moment is determined by the action he takes. If you have set worthwhile goals and have developed a plan of action, set your plan into action any time of the day or night by acting on it. Don't lose precious time by waiting for the time to be right. Become a self-starter. It's how you act that determines how you feel, not how you feel that determines how you act. Robin, back to you.
We just met the two cutest poodles at Green Lake, if that's possible, and we're here interviewing
Katie Rinaldi. I live in Green Lake.
And first of all, tell me a little bit about your business.
Well, it's called Fido and Fluffy Pet Care, and I was originally a veterinary assistant. And after that, I decided I wanted to work for myself, so I started my business in 05, and I do dog walking, I do overnight pet sitting, I do daycare, whatever the need is.
So are you planning on buying any gifts for your dogs this holiday season?
Of course I am. Oh, usually mini dog toys, possibly a new sweater, some treats, of course. Santa Paws is coming.
And where do you do your shopping?
It varies. All the Best, Mud Bay, depends, like PetSmart or anywhere that find interesting things.
And what part of town do you usually go shopping in?
Northgate area, Green Lake, Ballard sometimes.
Well, thank you. And we also have with us...
I'm Angela. I'm Katie's sister.
So where are you planning on doing your holiday shopping this year?
Probably Northgate. I do go downtown occasionally. I like to go down there around 5 p.m. when all the lights are on. I think it's really fun to be down there.
Well, thank you very much and have a great holiday. Okay, so if you could state your name.
Emily. I live in Portland. I usually do my Christmas shopping on the 23rd and 24th.
And where do you prefer to go shopping in that last minute panic mode?
I tend to think about what I would want and then go buy it for someone else.
And then you borrow it back?
Yeah, eventually it comes back to me. Yeah, I have found that.
So if you could say your name and where you're from?
Mike Dorr from Eugene, Oregon.
So where are you planning to do your holiday shopping this season?
You asked a very interesting thing because I actually don't plan on doing much holiday shopping this season.
And why is that?
We just don't celebrate it that much in that way. We do our own traditions that don't include shopping.
So do you have any children or grandchildren?
We have three grandchildren and three children.
And how do your grandchildren feel about this non-shopping behavior?
We actually set up a college fund for them. The gifts that we send the grandchildren are actually for the college fund, and the children support that totally. But they give a lot of gifts. The grandchildren aren't as positive about this whole thing. They would rather get toys.
And how old are they?
8, 5, and 3.
This is Minding Your Business at Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. You just heard people who are walking Green Lake talk about their holiday shopping plans for this year. Patricia Vaccarino is a working class kid from Yonkers, New York, a town about a half hour drive north of New York City without traffic. After college, Patricia drove her battered Chevy Impala cross country to California and up the coast, eventually ending up with only $300 in her pocket in Seattle. After working in a law office and later attending law school, she got started in PR by doing outreach for K. Smith Productions, which was founded by Seattle businessman Lester Smith and Hollywood celebrity Danny Kaye. Patricia later launched her own business, Anthus Communications, and PR for People to help individuals build their professional brands. A key interest of Patricia's is ballet, and she started dancing at an age when even the world's most gifted ballerinas have long retired. Her experience as an adult dancer inspired her to see amazing connections between ballet and business and life. Patricia took this experience into her sixth book, PR for People, Steps. It's an unusual business book about building a professional brand through hard work, just like a dancer learns technique, movement, and artistry. Welcome to Minding Your Business, Patricia.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, Robin. Yeah, the whole thing with dance is that dance is basically about exploring excellence. And I don't think that you can really be a good business person unless you keep on looking for those different angles and twists in order to make you better at what you do. So that's the whole thing with dance and why I think that that training over time gives you that discipline and focus to really to reach for a higher level.
So explain to me, first of all, what you mean by excellence.
Excellence is going out there and continuing to see what needs to be improved. As people living a life, there are always like little adjustments that we can make to make something a little better, to reach for a higher ideal. I don't think that we were placed on this earth to be schlubs. I think that we really need to go out there and that we need to drive a little harder, that we need to be a little better, we need to be better people, we need to do better business.
For those of us, well, I shouldn't say myself, but for many of our listeners who aren't from the East Coast, can you define for us a schlub?
Basically a very lazy person.
Okay, so
slothful. How's
slothful,
that?
Yes.
I'm a slob, if you need a reference.
Well, we'll keep that in mind. Thanks,
yeah,
Erin.
I'll work on it. By the end of this session, I'll get you back to ballet.
Oh, well, yeah. That would be very interesting to watch our board operator doing ballet in the studio.
Well,
that'd
he's had 6 years of
weirder
training.
Weirder things have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're speaking about excellence. I mean, of course, years ago, there was that book called In Search of Excellence, where they talked about corporations seeking excellence.
Yeah.
And there was a series of videos about them and so forth. But how do we apply this idea of excellence and improvement to a small business? Can you give me any concrete examples where you've helped businesses or small businesses do that?
Sometimes you have to be very direct with a client and you have to tell them what is not working. And it may be that they don't have the right people on board, or the people aren't really speaking, you know, to who they are and what they do. Sometimes those things can be painful because they may not want to let go of those individuals in an organization, but they have to make tough choices. That's just one example out of many.
What happens if you're a very small business? You have, well, basically you work for yourself. Everybody who has that size business is running around with their heads cut off because they're so busy. They have so
Absolutely.
Much going on. How did they continually seek ways to be excellent?
You have to take the time to develop a certain amount of what I would call professional detachment. It may be hiring an outside business consultant, somebody to come in as a business coach. It may be joining a group. There are many organizations that are composed of CEOs only, you know, for small businesses, and that they'll set up roundtables on an ongoing basis. So you come in and you'll bring up a problem or show what's working or not working and present it to the group and get a lot of good feedback. Sometimes it may come from other sources of people that you know. It could be from a spouse. It could be from a friend. It could even be from your children, that they may have the honesty to tell you what's working and what's not working. At the end of the day, it's the bottom line. If your revenue is going down, it's not increasing, or you're not growing in some way, I think that speaks for itself. And then you have to look for someone or some organization to help you to turn around.
As a consultant myself, I often run across ways that someone can improve, and you can have plenty of honest people around you, but one thing I've encountered with clients over the years is that they aren't always receptive to the feedback. How do you manage that aspect as a consultant yourself?
it's too bad. I mean, I'd say that you have to check back later on. Sometimes a client might not be ready to take a correction right now. Maybe 6 months down the line, they will be when they see that there hasn't been any improvement or the thing that isn't working hasn't changed at all.
So how do you talk to them about how they should be open-minded? Do you give them advice about, in other words, how do you say to them it's really important for you to be an open-minded person?
I can't in any way encourage someone to be open-minded. And if they're hiring me, they're hiring me to do my job. And in that in and of itself means that I'm going to be direct about how to help them and what's working and what's not. Otherwise, I don't think that I can really earn or justify my professional fees.
I know. I understand the feeling. I mean, I've encountered it where you are hired to do a job, but then they don't want to do the job you tell them to do, which I find kind of a contradiction in terms, but it's not unheard of.
Then you don't want to work with that person or that company. It's that simple.
You move on to the next client.
You bet.
Yeah. So speaking of moving on to the next client, what are some of the ways you go about finding new clients?
I get a lot of word of mouth referral, and I do a number of things for my business. I have a newsletter that I send out every month, which has a high level of readership. That's just one example. And quite often that's been picked up by the press. Reuters picked up one of my stories a couple of years ago, and we got international coverage out of that one. So
walking
that's
the talk.
Way.
You're walking the talk.
You bet.
That's good. You're listening to Minding Your Business. I'm on eRadio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. We've been speaking with Patricia Vecchierino of PR for People about branding and PR and what it takes to work with clients. What value does a personal brand have for you? Has your personal brand helped you attract more business? Tell us about it or email info@mybmedia.com. Social media is on everybody's minds, right? How has social media changed PR?
I love social media. When my clients get picked up in the press, I have a larger audience to post the article. I mean, I can post it on Twitter. I can go on Facebook. It can go on LinkedIn. It can go on other sites that we may be using. So it really extends and expands the life of any kind of media placement that we get. I think the real danger is dealing with people who don't know about using traditional press in order to and how to integrate it with social media. I mean, you really need both.
Let's revisit that when we come back with the panel after the break. You're listening to Minding Your Business at Money Radio 1300 KKOL. It's all about business-to-business services on today's show.
And now we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Once again, here's Robin.
We've been discussing what it takes to run your business from a finance and marketing standpoint. Are you the owner of a small business? Share your story with us. We're here with Patricia Vecchierino of PR for People and Dana Twight of Twight Financial Education. So we had a story at the top of the show about the new tolls on the 520 bridge. In fact, a recent poll of Eastside residents by King 5 and Survey USA revealed that 55% of respondents on the East Side said they would be more likely to shop on their own side of the lake. That's one way to shop local. What do you guys think of that?
Wow.
Do you think it's going to have an impact on downtown shopping, for example?
Absolutely. I think people have a psychological barrier about crossing a bridge anyway, and I think this is really going to intensify the situation that people will stay in their own backyard and shop.
And it's not just shopping. What about going out to dinner and so forth?
Well, it brings to mind the phrase hyper-local. Maybe that's the trend for this month, is hyper-local Christmas shopping on your block,
whenever
you can walk.
Whenever I think about local shopping, I always think, well, okay, so I'll never eat a banana again unless I'm going to the Caribbean. I mean, does anybody else look at it that way?
It's really hard to stay consistent, Robin. You know, you go to the store and you say, I'm not going to buy any Granny Smith apples.
Yeah, it's hard to be a purist these days, isn't it? I mean, or maybe it was always hard to be a purist. Maybe, you know, we're all going to revert back to the 1700s. You know, I'm all about local, but there are some limitations, I think.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I heard a story this week where they were talking about how the Washington, I think it was on NPR, they were talking about how the Made in Washington shops actually carried T-shirts that were made in China and maybe some other Asian country. But the thing is, we don't have a lot of fabrication of the actual fabric in the T-shirts anymore. So what are we going to print stuff on if we don't import?
I think
it's nice to consider being a purist, but are there limitations to that? Right?
There must be limitations. I look at cool cards these days. I had the opportunity to buy some locally made, handmade business Christmas cards last weekend because I decided I didn't want to send out cards that were made in China.
You can always make your own. I mean,
yes,
that too.
Well, I essentially paid somebody else to make my own. So.
Oh, well, there you go. And they were a local person.
They were a local person.
Okay.
I got to meet her.
That's great.
Fabulous.
One other thing about the bridge. I mean, a lot of us are consultants, and we don't commute. So we could avoid those commuter really high fees. But the point is, now how is that hitting our pocketbooks and our behaviors? Are we going to change what we're doing?
We should ask the financial planner. It's a tax deduction anyway. So.
Oh, yeah. Let's ask,
right.
Let's ask Dana Twight.
Yeah.
What do you think about
that's
that?
Right. Keep really good records. Yeah. I know my mom always told me you keep that notebook in the car so you can write down the mileage
Absolutely.
And the cost.
Well, that's a good tip.
Yeah.
Any tips from the marketing standpoint? I mean, you're going to have to change when you schedule meetings and things like that. Is that going to affect supporting customers
and
providing
service? Well,
I've
been doing that all along. Anyway, that not traveling during peak hours, it only makes sense. I mean, why do you want to spend more time in your car? I mean, especially when we're all inundated with social media to manage and all the other aspects of running our business. I mean, why do you want to spend that time in a car? So you really have to plan carefully.
We're here with Dana Twight of Twight Financial
Education.
Thank you very much. Those three-word names are always a bit challenging. And we're here with Patricia Vaccarino of PR for People, who just wrote her sixth book called Step. Can you give us some ideas or tips or things that have come out of this personal branding book?
Well, yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is that I think that the term branding is overused, and there's a certain mystique that's still attached to brand. And to remember that all brand does is pose a question. And the question is, what do you stand for? That's the question you must answer. And the easiest way to do that is to use social media, traditional press, and networking. And networking encompasses everything from getting speaking engagements to go and walking trade shows where you might find potential business partners. This isn't rocket science. What's difficult is sustaining this over a period of time, of doing these three things that you need to do whether you want to or not.
So which three things are those?
That's
exactly?
Social media.
Oh, actually participating in
right.
these.
Getting press coverage and then networking.
And getting back to the, what do you say when you go to those? What are you consistently putting out there in these? That's the way you get the word out, but what word are you putting out? How do you figure out that part?
Well, when you assess who you are, your brand, you have to look at everything about yourself. I mean, you can't, you have to look at your background, your ethnicity, your faith, your religious beliefs, your experience, your education, your credentials. It may be the different things that you've done in life, your hobbies, your interests, all those things work together to really define who you are. So that's how you're going to differentiate yourself from other people operating in your same space. At the same time, you can't be so niche-oriented that you don't define your space correctly, that you don't come up with some weird, wacky title to define what you do.
Don't you think you have to, that definition needs to fit within the frame of who your target audience is, too?
Absolutely. Audience is critical, that you must always consider the special needs of your audience. And I think that going back to the dance training, you're taught that because you're performing, you're out there, and you can always take that back and look at it and say, okay, who's your audience?
Exactly. What
is your positioning to that audience? How are you presenting yourself?
I always find with clients that is one of the biggest things they don't focus on, which is who is your customer? They don't define it. They don't talk about demographics. They don't have a psychographic for their customer. And that means they are marketing myopic. In other words, they are totally internally facing. And what you're saying as a dancer, you need to face externally.
The thing is, when you're establishing your reputation, though, and if you have a specific audience that you're speaking to make sure that you are getting picked up and published in their trade publications. Say your outreach is to medical doctors, right? Those publications have a very high, they're hungry for content. So if you could write about your expertise for those publications, that would be just a wonderful way to get picked up.
You're going to learn a lot more by reading Patricia Vaccarino's book, PR for People Steps. Looks like we're out of time. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'd like to thank our guest, Dana Twight of Twight Financial Education. To learn more about her no-fee financial services, visit twightfinancial.com. Our other guest was Patricia Vaccarino of PR for People. For more information, visit prforpeople.com. For an archive of today's program, links to our guest websites, and more, visit mybmedia.com. I'm Robin Block. Thanks for listening. Money Radio KKOL 1300 in Seattle. We'll talk to you next week. Now get out there and remember to shop local.
You've been listening to Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.